My name is Oliver Pankiewicz. I have three papers I'm going to present here on home automation networks. Move on to slide two. There's an outline of what I'm going to present. I'll quickly go through my background and then talk about some of the home automation applications being used today. Next, I'll go through some of the different home automation protocols. I'll go through how they work, their details, and how they network with other home automation devices. Some of the ones I'll go through are Zigbee, Z-Wave, Insteon, and X10. And then next I'll go through the network OSI layers, and lastly I'll go through and compare and contrast them. So moving on to slide three, I thought I would give some background myself since I'm actually not in class with you guys. I'm located in Orlando. I'm actually about 5 minutes from UCF, so go figure. But I'm an electrical engineer, and I work at NASA at the Kennedy Space Center. I mostly do control engineering, designing ground support equipment for whatever vehicle comes after a space shuttle. No one knows exactly what that is yet, but we'll have some equipment for it to help run it. I work on an environmental control system, which is located throughout the Space Center, and it's used to provide conditioned air to the space vehicle and to purge it when it's being loaded with cryo fuels. I also work in a hazardous gas leak detection lab, and I help design all the control systems which read all the fire and leak detectors at the pad. So I also have a lot of interest in home automation, and I'm working on starting my own company in home automation. So that's why I thought I would present papers and articles which focus on the different home automation protocols, how they work, and how they compare and contrast to each other. So on the next slide is the papers. The three papers I have listed on the next slide all have long titles, so I won't go and read through all of them. But the common theme in all of them is that they went through the many different home automation protocols and took a look at the pluses and minuses of each one. The protocols include Zigbee, Z-Wave, Insteon, X10, and others. They also went through the details of how each protocol works and what applications they can be used. So on the next slide, I'm going to go through some of the applications for home automation. The first paper went through and gave some examples on home automation applications, which helps give a context for all these protocols they're designed for. So some examples of use are light control. Light control is typically the first thought when people think of home automation. You can use it to turn on the front porch light when you come home late, or you can have lights automatically turn on and off depending on a motion sensor that goes off. Security monitoring is another application. Motion sensors can be used to automatically turn things like the lights I just mentioned on or off. There's also cameras that can also be monitored and be used to provide security. HVAC, an air conditioner can have its temperature adjusted, so there's another application there. Smart grid is another example of where home automation protocols are being used today. I actually just got a letter from my power utility, and they offered to set up a smart power type system in my house. They would install a smart meter, which then sends signals to power hungry appliances such as a water heater or my air conditioner. And the signals would turn appliances off during the peak use, and then I would get a discounted rate on my power bill in return. So I like my air conditioning, so I decided to not install it, but I could see how some people would want to save money and how the utility companies would use it to help control the overall power load of their system. So sensors is next on the list. Sensors can be used for home automation, such as motion sensors, smoke detectors, and water level detection, which can be put in a basement, for example, to detect that a pipe broke and now flooding your basement. Door locks is another example. I saw a few automated door locks at Home Depot, so I know they're available, and people can use them to let others in when they're not home, or maybe they lost their keys. So window blinds is next on the list. You could have automated blinds that close or open depending on the time of day. It's useful for those hard to get windows. Power outlets can be automated to turn appliances on and off. And home theater items like receivers and speakers can be controlled with home automation. And lastly, there are scenarios which combine some of the devices I just mentioned. So, for example, you come home, you can have a motion sensor turn lights on and automatically adjust the thermostat. So on the next slide is an example home automation diagram with some of the devices I mentioned in the previous slide. There are wireless RF-based home automation devices, and there are power line-based home automation devices, and some actually have both capabilities. There's also usually a home automation controller, which is used to send signals to the devices on the home automation network. And the controller is also used as an internet gateway, so devices can be remotely controlled. So to the upper left of this diagram is a controller connected to a cable or DSL modem. So the home automation system overall can be connected to the internet. And then below that, directly, there are some power line devices communicating over the power lines, which is that black line. And then below that, and to the right, are also some wireless RF controlled devices. So on the next slide is mesh networking. Most of the home automation protocols use mesh networking. So I'll go through what it is. Mesh networking allows multiple devices to form an ad hoc network, which can be used to send data back to a controller. Each device can act as an independent transmitter, and each device can communicate with multiple other devices too. So if a device goes down, mesh networks can heal themselves by routing around the dead terminal. So they have healing properties. Devices can route data from one device to another, and it can extend now the overall range of the network. And that's why mesh networks work better when there are more devices too. Since home automation devices include lots of sensors who are sometimes battery powered, mesh networking helps with reliability since data can be rerouted when devices that are not powered are down. Move on to the next slide, home automation protocols. There are many home automation protocols that the paper goes through. The lack of a definitive standard is one of the problems in the home automation market today, and is one of the reasons why there's still a whole bunch of these protocols used today. But some of the popular ones are Zigbee, Z-Wave, Insteon, and X10. X10 has been around since the 70s. There's also other protocols such as HomePlug, Wave-Ins, and even Wi-Fi. I don't have time to go through all of them, but I will go through Zigbee, Z-Wave, Insteon, and X10. So we'll start on X10, which is on the next slide. Insteon is the first protocol I'll go through, and it's a dual mesh network. So its physical layer uses both power lines and RF. Power line networking works by using a home's existing power lines. Since almost all homes have power lines, Insteon has an advantage of using and existed a wired infrastructure. Power lines do have issues though. If you're trying to send a signal on them, the main power input at a fuse box has two 210 volt AC power lines which are out of phase. So if a signal sent from a device on one phase is sent to a device on another phase, then there's no direct connection there. So Insteon solves this phase issue by being a dual mesh network. It sends signals through both power lines and RF at the same time. This is the RF signals for Insteon use the ISM standard, so it's in the 900 megahertz frequency range. RF, of course, has problems too. There could be interference issue from other devices, other wireless devices, or there could be natural interference issues from walls, as an example. So the next slide shows a diagram of an NCDL network. It is dual mesh network, as I mentioned, with RF and power lines. The power line network is split up in the diagram here, shown with one phase on the left and one on the right. And then devices within a phase can connect to each other through power line networking, which is shown as the black solid line. And then devices on different phases can connect through RF bridges, which is shown by the dashed lines. On the next slide is NCDL details. NCDL is a peer-to-peer network, so there's no master controller. And this means that any device can be a sender, or a receiver, or a repeater. They use a method of transmission called simulcast. It works by a device sending a signal, and then it could be any device, actually. And then devices next to it get the signal and repeat the signal. And then all the devices then repeat it again, and also repeat it a final third time. And the three repeats and four total signals that were sent would have then reached its final destination, and an acknowledgement would have been sent after those four repeats. Signals are sent through both RF and power line at the same time. There's also no collision avoidance here, and NCDL decided to rely on the very low probability that multiple signals will be created at the same time. So they say they don't need collision avoidance according to their specs. On the next slide is a picture of how an NCDL packet is transmitted. We're on slide 12. Packets are transmitted at the zero crossing of an AC signal. This is where the least interference is. Each packet is 24 bits, and the rate is 13 kilobits per second. NCDL is designed for commands and monitoring, so low bit rates are acceptable here, and it helps lower the cost of their chips. For encryption and security, NCDL uses rolling codes. This is similar to how garage door openers use rolling codes today. Also, NCDL has two types of messages. One is called standard, and it's 120 raw bits, so it requires five zero crossings of that AC signal there. And the second is called extended, and it has 264 raw bits, and it requires 11 zero crossings. And then finally, the RF signals use frequency shift keying for modulation, while the power line signals use binary phase shift keying. Moving on to the next slide, show some details of the NCDL packets. These are power line packets, and the top one is for the standard message, which is 5 packets long, and then the bottom ones are for the extended message, which is 11 packets long. There is a start packet to start off a frame, and then body packets to hold data and encoding bits. So the body packet is shown at the very bottom of this page, and a diagram shows how the sync and start bits work. The one above that shows the start packet and its bit structure. On the next slide is NCDL RF packets. These are transmitted the same time as power line messages, as I mentioned before, but RF is faster, so NCDL doesn't have to break up the message into smaller sizes. And that's why there's 80 data bits in the RF standard message, while there was 18 in a power line version of this message. There's also an extended message, which is shown at the very bottom. So the next slide is the Z-Wave home automation protocol. Z-Wave is not open. It's a proprietary protocol started by a company called Zensys. And now that company actually was bought by a company called Sigma. Z-Wave is popular commercially. You can find products from them made by GE and other popular companies. There's also an organization called the Z-Wave Alliance, which makes sure products meet specs and that one company's products will work with another's. Z-Wave is RF only, and it's on the 908 MHz spectrum, in the US, and it's in the 868 megahertz spectrum in Europe. A new version of Z-Wave allows transmissions on the 2.4 gigahertz portion. The data rates for Z-Wave is 9.6 to 200 kilobits per second. And the 206 kilobits per second is for the 2.4 gigahertz portion of the frequency spectrum. Z-Wave has a maximum of 232 nodes on a single Z-Wave network. Z-Wave does use mesh networking, so sensors can route information through its network. It also has a master and slave architecture, so there is a controller handling all communication, and this is along with the routing tables for the nodes. So this is different from the previous Instan protocol I was talking about, where they use a peer-to-peer network infrastructure in Instan. Z-Wave uses a master and slave architecture. And Z-Wave does also use binary phase shift keying for the RF signals, and does have a collision avoidance with random backoff time. So on the next slide, 16, I go through some of the Z-Wave device types. Z-Wave uses a master and slave architecture, so there is a controller and there are slave devices. Controllers are typically remote controls or PC programs. Slave devices are usually the N-item devices like sensors or switches, and they are sometimes battery-powered, so that has to be taken account when you're using battery-driven devices. Controller nodes are used to calculate routes and send commands to slave nodes, and then slave nodes are typically a sensor or a device, and they are used to route a signal through the mesh network. So I'll go through the details of the controllers. They host routing tables for the mesh network. The controller nodes use the routing tables to calculate the best route for a signal to get to the slave node. And then routes can be passed to slave nodes in order to be retransmitted to the final slave node, which is basically the basis of a mesh network. There can also be multiple controller nodes. However, there can only be one primary controller node at a time. The primary controller node has capabilities to include and exclude devices and slave nodes. And then the primary controller node also can manage the allocation of node IDs. Secondary controllers can get copies of the routing tables from the primary controller, and then can be used to send signals to devices. So, unlike controller nodes, though, slave nodes do not compute the routing tables. However, slave nodes can store pre-configured routing tables, so they can act as a repeater, sending data from one node to another. Okay, so on the next slide, show some Z-Wave routing examples. The top diagram shows how Z-Wave can run with full acknowledgments. Z-Wave also has options to run without full acknowledgments, which is shown in the very bottom diagram. So on the top diagram, if a controller wants to send a command to a device that requires multiple hops, if it starts off by sending a packet or a frame to the slave 1 device. Slave 1 device sends an acknowledgment back to the controller, and then slave 1 also repeats the frame to slave 2, which also then sends an acknowledgement back to slave 1 that it received the original frame. When slave 2 gets the command, it needs to send a routed acknowledgement back to the controller. This is to show end-to-end confirmation. So slave 1 receives the frame and interprets this as an acknowledgement. It also sends an acknowledgement back to slave 2 that it received it, and then slave 1 repeats the acknowledgement back to the controller. The controller then receives it and confirms the reception of the frame by sending out an acknowledgement frame to slave 1, and then on the very actually bottom of this diagrams here, the bottom diagram there, you see how there's a fewer acknowledgements. The controller sends the command to slave 2 and then it goes through to slave 1. There is no acknowledgement for the hops, but there is a routed acknowledgement that goes back to the controller. And then the final acknowledgement is from the controller to slave 1. It doesn't actually go back all the way to slave 2. So to move on to the next slide, slide 18, it shows a breakdown of a Z-Wave packet. The maximum payload size is 64 bytes. Also at the bottom of the diagram, and they'll up Z-Wave packets start with a preamble used for synchronization. It then has a start of frame bit, followed by data, and then it ends with an end of frame packet. The transport layer carries a home ID, a source ID, a header, data length, and checksum frames. And the home ID portion of the frame is a unique identifier for a particular Z-Wave network. So if multiple Z-Wave networks exist in the same RF wireless area, then the home ID and identifier is used to differentiate the multiple networks. The home ID identifier is 32 bits long. A node ID is used to assign each individual node on a network. So node IDs are assigned to slave devices by the primary controller, and then the node ID portion of the frame is 8 bits long. Now there are four types of transport frames, which they are routed, multicast, single cast, and broadcast. The diagram here doesn't show broadcast, but a routed frame is normal operation of a command being sent to a single device. Multicast frames allow transmission to a number of nodes, while single cast is the opposite and sends signals to a single specified node. And then finally, there's a broadcast frame, which is sent to all nodes on the Z-Wave network. The very top of the diagram is the Z-Wave application frame, which is specific to the applications and commands being sent. So go to the next slide, which is a Zigbee. Many of you know Zigbee. It's based off of the IEEE 802.15.4 spec. Zigbee uses the lower two layers of the IEEE spec. It uses the physical and data link layers. When the Zigbee committee got together, they started off with design goals, which included a wireless network used for many applications, including home automation, medical devices, industrial controls, alarms, and other applications. Another design goal they had was a self-organizing mesh network, and they also had low data rates and low power consumption as design goals. So in the end, they came up with an agreement on a Zigbee spec, and then they released it to the public in 2005. So on the next slide, some of the details of the spec, which, as I mentioned, is part of the IEEE 802.15.4. Spec. It uses binary phase shift keying for the 868 megahertz portion, and 950, and actually uses binary phase shift keying for the 915 megahertz frequency range too. The 915 megahertz range is for U.S., while the 868 megahertz range is for Europe. And there's also a 2.4 gigahertz spectrum range. It has a larger address, so it supports up to 64,000 nodes, which is way more than the Z-Wave's 232 nodes. Zigbee does use mesh networking and does have a master controller with routing tables, just like Z-Wave. Packet sizes are max 128 bytes. Data rates vary per frequency. US has a data rate of 20 kilobits per second for its 915 megahertz range. Europe has a data rate of 40 kilobits per second for its 868 megahertz spectrum, and then both have data rates of 250 kilobits per second if they use a 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. However, 2.4 gigahertz has a lower range and wireless transmission, which could be down to 10 meters. So depending on interference, Zigbee has a range of 10 to 100 meters. Zigbee also uses carrier sense multiple axis with collision avoidance. So it checks to see if a device is on a Zigbee network is talking before it sends its data out. And then lastly, Zigbee does have built-in security encryption, uses 128-bit encryption keys. So go on to the next slide. which is Zigbee device types. Zigbee has three types of devices, which are Zigbee coordinators, Zigbee routers, Zigbee end devices. Coordinators are controllers for the Zigbee network. There is one per network, and it's used to discover other devices. Coordinators also store the security information and are known as trust centers. Zigbee routers are used to relay information from the controller to other devices. And then routers also can be end devices too, which is the last device type, which is a Zigbee end device. They usually have lower capabilities, and they can't relay data. But this lets them save on costs and on power, since devices can go to sleep and save their battery. Okay, on the next slide is the Zigbee software layer. This is a table going through the different software services that the Zigbee stack performs. So the Mac support layer, software layer can send and receive data, can manage transition queues, can perform network associations, could synchronize devices, can scan the radio channels, and then get the communication status. You can manage parameters and beacons. It could sync with without beacons. It could manage device orphans, and it could turn radio on and off. The network software layer can start a network. It could join and leave a network. It can configure new devices, assign addresses. It could synchronize within a network, and it can manage security and routing. The application support software layer can discover and bind, and then security software layer can manage access control lists, it can manage packet freshness timers, and it can manage that 128-bit AES encryption. On the next slide is the Zigbee packet, and it shows a basic breakdown of a Zigbee packet. It starts with a preamble to help synchronization, then there is a start of packet and a delimiter, and then a physical header to help with frame lengths, and then finally there is a data field which can be up to 1,016 bits long. Okay, on the next slide is X10. This is slide 24. X10 is a home automation protocol most people know about. It's a technology from the 1970s that almost went mainstream, but adds limitations and reliability issues. So, X10 uses power line networking like Instion does. It sends signals during a zero crossing of that 120 volt AC power line. Since it was designed in the 70s, it does have its technology limitations though. For example, it's limited to 256 devices due to its address bits. It also has only 16 command codes, so it's not really modular, and its data rate is the slowest out of all of the protocols I went through. It's at 60 bits per second. So this limits X10 to basic on-off commands. There's also no acknowledgments or error correction, which is why people sometimes turn on a light with X10 and doesn't actually turn on. And lastly, there's no security, so nothing really stops an upset neighbor from controlling your home. So on the next slide is X10 signals. It shows a picture of a 60 Hz power line cycle that has both X10 and Instion. By the way, Instion is compatible with X10, but Instion starts earlier, about 800 microseconds earlier than X10, which is at the zero crossing point. They both send a signal to zero crossing, and there is one X10 burst of 120 cycles on a carry frequency of 120 kHz, and the burst lasts about one second. X10 uses Manchester encoding, so a burst followed by no burst signifies an X10-1 symbol, and no burst followed by a burst signifies an X10-0 symbol. The instantaneous data rate of X10 is 120 bits per second, since there is 1 bit per zero crossing and 2 crossings per 60 Hz power line signal. So, however, a 2 Two bits are needed for one data bit due to Manchester encoding, so its sustained data rate is really 60 bits per second. Go to the next slide, which is extant packet. It's much simpler than the other protocols, and it's probably due to that X10 was designed in the 70s, and there were technology and hardware limitations back then. And an X10 message consists of a 4-bit start code, followed by an 8-bit house code, and then it's followed by a 10-bit key code. Each message, X10 message, is sent twice, and then it's finally followed by 6 zero crossings of silence before starting another message. The start code is always 1110, but the rest of the message consists of complementary pairs of bits, so it's either 01 or 10, but they never have a 00 or 11 unless there's an error. There are only 16 house codes, which are A through P, and there are only 16 unit codes, which are 1 through 16. Together, they're used to send commands, and is why there's a 256 node limitation. The next slide is the last protocol I'll go through. It's 6LoWPAN, and it's a way to use IP version 6 over low-power wireless personal area networks. The goal of 6LoWPAN was to try to use an existing internet network infrastructure to connect with all the home automation devices. The protocol came up with a way to use IP version 6 packets on top of the IEEE 802.15.4 network, and this is the same network Zigbee uses. So like Zigbee, 6LoWPAN is also a mesh network, but however, IP version 6 is not really designed for sensor networks. It's designed more for a regular computer network, so there are issues with using IP version 6 and TCPs. So 6LoWPAN has its challenges and its issues. One example is IP version 6 mandates support for 12 80-byte packets, while IEEE 802.15.4 frame size is 127 bytes. So there's some fragmentation there, where they came up with a solution of using one IP version 6 address, and then the hops are performed in a different IP layer using the 802.15.4 addresses. There's also compressed a 40 byte IP version 6 header into a 2 byte header, and there are other issues that 6LoWPAN has, like large payload sizes for devices that don't need it, so it hasn't really taken off as a home automation protocol. Go on to the next slide is a physical layer comparison of all the different home automation protocols that I've been mentioning. This is a chart that was given in the first paper, which was a survey on the home automation networks, and it gives a comparison of Zigbee, 6LoWPAN, Z-Wave, and Insteon. The chart does show the RF ranges, which I talked about earlier too, and it gives the ranges. Zigbee is 10 to 100 meters, Z-Wave is 30 to 100 meters, and Insteon is up to 45 meters. Insteon has a bit rate of 38.4 kilobits per second, but its power line bit rate is 13 kilobits per second, which slows the overall Insteon speed down. Both Zigbee and Z-Wave can go up to can go over 200 kilobits per second, but it depends on the version of Zigbee and Z-Wave and the chips their devices are using, which would have to support the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. Zigbee also has a multi-channel system, so it can analyze the frequency ranges and see which one has the least interference, so it could be better against noise then. Z-Wave and Insteon are single channel, so they are more susceptible to noise if there's interference on that channel. But however, the newer versions of Z-Wave do offer three channels on a 2.4 gigahertz frequency range. So the next slide is the link layer comparison. None of the protocols use collision detection, but Z-Wave and Zigbee do use collision avoidance. Insteon does use simulcast, and there are no controllers, so they rely on the low probability that the two devices won't talk at the same time. Message sizes are 127 bytes max for Zigbee, 64 bytes max for Z-Wave, and Insteon, it depends on what type of message it is. So it's 14 bytes for standard and 28 bytes for extended message. And for error control, Insteon has 8-bit CRC, and Zigbee and Z-Wave both have acknowledgments that message were received. So on the next slide, it shows the communication comparison. All of them have unicast or broadcast style messages. They have various bit sizes for their identifiers, and then Z-Wave and Zigbee have controllers and N item type devices, while Insteon does not have any controllers. On the next slide is the network layer comparison. Z-Wave controllers are the only devices in a Z-Wave network which store routing tables. In Zigbee, though, routing tables can be stored on the Zigbee coordinators or on the Zigbee routers. And then Insteon doesn't even have routing tables. Z-Wave and Insteon have a maximum of four hops, while Zigbee can do more. And for end-to-end reliability, Zigbee uses link quality metrics, which are available in the 802.15.4 spec. So it uses bit error rates. Z-Wave does not have any link quality indicators and just uses hops counts to find the best link. And then Insteon uses its peer-to-peer network structured and how it's and simulcast to make sure devices receive signals. So on the next slide, it compares application layer. Zigbee has good security measures when compared to the others. Z-Wave has 128-bit AES encryption, but that's only on its newest chips. Insteon has rolling codes, which is not that difficult to break. While Zigbee, on the other hand, has integrity, access control, and key management features for security. On the implementation side, Zigbee requires the largest memory footprint. And then lastly, Zigbee's spec and 6-low-pan spec are publicly available, while Insteon Z-Wave is not. So on the next slide is the last slide. If you have any questions, please post them on Sakai's discussion board, and I'll get to them as soon as I can. Thanks, everyone.